Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live on our YouTube channel and all social media platforms, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve post-game show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Ezra Ginsberg, and from the arena, as you can hear with the background music there, our colleague Dave Manouk at up in the press box. Winnipeg Jets victorious tonight by a 3-3 margin, a 4-1 game that was a lot, that seemed like it was well in hand for a while there. And then the Ottawa Senators, the never give up Ottawa Senators, came hard late in that third period, made it a little more interesting than the Winnipeg Jets undoubtedly wanted it to be. But the Jets do survive. They get the 2 points, clean 2 points, Ezra, and it's a 4-3 victory for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, Drew, I guess we'll bring in Dave when Frank Sinatra is done singing. I'm pretty sure that's Frank Sinatra, but a little bit too loud there, Dave M. But the score is 4-3 when you look at, how this game ended. It's a little bit too close for comfort for the Jets. But obviously, completely one-sided, guys. Like, the second period was one of the most lopsided periods I think we've seen all year. And give the Senators credit. They stay in it, and they get a couple of goals in the third period. Logan Stanley takes that roughing penalty. And, Josh Norris is a player that, I've always liked. And, this Senators team is improving game by game. We know that they just beat the Montreal Canadiens, but this was all Jets guys. And it was kind of funny, right? Like, in that second period when Kyle Connor scores that goal that obviously goes off the stick of Chris Tierney, Dave, you're thinking, this could have been a 5-1, 6-1 game the way that second period was going, and all it takes is that goal by Norris and all of a sudden the Senators have some life. But this was all Jets for the majority of the game. And heading into this game with Pierre-Luc Dubois only having one goal in his last seven games, I thought the fact that he got a couple of goals, even though, the first one wasn't a beautiful one, that was big, because going into this game, that was kind of the big storyline, that Dubois, Wheeler, and Stastny, hadn't been putting the puck in the net maybe as much as you would like. So overall, even though, it was a little bit nerve-wracking towards the end, a pretty good win, all things considered, for the Jets.
It's funny. It was one of those games where you're watching it and you think to yourself, that save Forsberg made in the third period on Scheifele really shouldn't have had a big impact on the game. And it was ironically, as I'm sitting here tweeting from the Illegal Curve account, I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe I should tweet, remember that save. But it seems a little glib to be doing that when the score is 4-1 or 4-2 for the Winnipeg Jets. And then they start to roll. But you're right, Ezzy. For the most part, that second period was just dominated by the Winnipeg Jets. And even though they give up that goal on the miscommunication between Blake Wheeler and Derek Forbert behind the Jets net, and Connor Hellebuyck lost the puck, you really didn't feel like that was a window to allow the Senators in, even though they scored shortly after the Jets had made it 2-0 on that Adam Lowry goal. So to me, it was a function of that second period was just, a real good run. And the Jets looked like a team that felt like they were in cruise control a little bit in that third period and took their foot off the gas. And it's a lesson they need to learn, because to your point, Ezzy, the Ottawa Senators, even though they're the last place team in the division, they just went in and beat Montreal, and they've been playing well of late. So you couldn't really afford to take them too lightly.
Well, you look at the teams, they've beaten Toronto a number of times this year. They've beat the Jets previously, of course. We remember that game, with 9 seconds to go in the third period, the Senators breaking the tie. The Senators play hard. They know their identity. There's a lack of talent on their roster, but they play hard and they do not wilt. And frankly, this is a game, it's 1-0 for the Jets after 20 minutes. If Ottawa's power play, if Josh Norris, scores that power play goal, let's say, on one of the first three opportunities the Senators had in their three first period power plays, it's a totally different game than how it ended up being. You look at this is one of those rare games for the Jets where they're the dominant team according to the, analytics and according to natural stat trick. And the scoreboard, it was not reflective of the dominance that occurred at 5-on-5 for the most part in this game. But, credit to the Senators in that they get, that they keep fighting throughout the course of the game. Credit to the Jets for getting the clean 2 points and for being the better of the two teams for the 60 minutes. all things considered, I think this is a, you know, you can understand the lull that occurred, but you also, that also serves as a reminder to the Jets that they can't afford that lull, certainly going forward against any of the teams in the North Division.
Yeah, and it's you know, pretty significant road trip coming up. We know about the back to back with Ottawa and Toronto, and it's not going to be, you know, the hardest road trip. Certainly not as hard as that, you know, 7-game road trip. You know, just when you factor in the length. But you're right, Drew. I mean, we've seen that so many times when a team goes up 3 goals, and you can have a, you know, a little bit of a letdown in the final frame. But you know, one of the players, you know, that I was watching, just because, you know, in a game like this, you, especially when it was 4-1, you know, after two, you know, that, you know, the Jets pretty much had this one in the bag. But Tim Stützle, like, I don't know how many votes he's going to get for the Calder Trophy, but, you know, I think, Dave, you'd agree, like, this guy is going to be an all-star for many years to come. And, you know, Alexis Lafreniere has drawn a lot of criticism, you know, for the New York Rangers, maybe with his lack of production at times. But, you know, Tim Stützle, just the skill level, he reminds you a little bit of Nikolai Ehlers, some of the things he's able to do. Obviously, they're, you know, different players, but different positions as well. But, I mean, he's just a guy that, you know, the sky is the limit for him. And, you know, Anton Forsberg, I know a lot of people in the chat are talking about him, and I think a lot of Jets fans heading into this game maybe saw that Forsberg was playing and thought, you know, this is the third string goalie, guys. But, you know, he was excellent in that win over the Montreal Canadiens, and, you know, he's only had 3 starts this year, but he's actually been, you know, very good. And that's one of the reasons why the Jets acquired him, right? Like, the Jets didn't acquire him because he was a bad goalie. They acquired him because if one of Hellebuck or Brassois went down, they knew that Forsberg could step in. Obviously, you know, they were hoping to keep Eric Comrie, but you guys know what I'm talking about. Forsberg's a good goalie. He's been a good goalie in the American Hockey League. He's obviously not a starter in the NHL, but, you know, it's pretty nice for him that, you know, he's gotten into 3 games here. Looks like, you know, he might, you know, get some more quality starts here down the stretch. Obviously, the Senators aren't going to be a playoff team, but yeah, there was a good chance that, you know, the Jets could have gone up 4 goals or 5 goals in this game, and then Ottawa doesn't have a chance to come back. So there's no doubt that, you know, Forsberg earned his salary in this game.
Yeah, he and, you know, I'm sure he had it was a bit of an enjoyable time for him, Dave, coming back to play here in Winnipeg after never getting into a game action, being on the Jets taxi squad for the majority of the season. And you know, he rewarded the Senators. He put in a workmanlike effort. I mean, what did he end up facing over the course of the game? You know, almost 45 shots, if I'm not mistaken. You know, so he certainly was busy tonight. 46 shots the Jets ended up with in the course of the 60-minute contest. So he was busy, and he gave the Senators a chance, and they were, you know, it's a 1-goal game. They pulled him out of the net, and they didn't pull him because of a bad performance. They pulled him because they were only down a goal late in the game, Dave.
You know what? I thought it was hilarious when our photographer Colby Spence was sending me pictures from warm-up, and he sent me a picture of Anton Forsberg, and he's wearing all Jets gear, Jets helmet, Jets pads, and you know, and a lot of people were commenting about that. And, you know, it's funny, I made a comment about, was that the first time that someone has scored on a Jets goalie wearing Jets goalie gear? I should have said in the opposing net, because then, of course, everybody reminded me of Laine and Ehlers scoring own goals, but I meant against the opposing goaltender. But, I mean, you know, look, Forsberg was full value, and he talked about what he learned in Winnipeg and his appreciation for Wade Flaherty and what he was able to kind of gain in terms of, you know, understanding of goaltending and his, you know, and he had, what was he here for, almost 2 months or something of that nature, I think, from January till he was claimed in March. So you know, look, he was here for a while, and, you know, you could see it in Blake Wheeler talking to him after a play. These guys obviously spent a lot of time with him, and he had a lot of time in Winnipeg, right? So he got to make some good connections with this team, and look, he played very well. He got peppered with shots, and it was almost like a reversal of what we saw early in the season with Ottawa when they were firing shot after shot after shot, you know, in game. And it seemed like it was kind of a role reversal, especially in that second period, where what did the Jets outshoot them, like 24-6 or something of that nature?
The second period was significantly one-sided, and it was one-sided in the shots on goal, 22-6 in the second period.
So,
of course, where the Jets jumped out and got their and really gave themselves that buffer with the Kyle Connor getting the fourth goal, which was certainly not the prettiest goal Kyle Connor has ever scored, but it certainly counts on the score sheet.
But at the end of the day, really, the lesson learned here is you just can't afford to take your foot off the gas. And I think that's what, you know, a lot of people are saying that in the chat, and they're right. I mean, again, this is what Ezzy said, right? This is a good Ottawa team that, while they're maybe have a little bit of a dearth of experience, you know, have some very good talented young players, and they're learning, and in a year or two they're going to be a very good team, especially with what they've got in Belleville. But again, you just can't afford to take your foot off the gas in the NHL. You got to play, again, as cliche as it is, a full 60 minutes.
And, you know, this just happened a couple of minutes ago, guys. Eric Staal just scored the winner. So, I mean, you know, they pick up a point on the Edmonton Oilers, but unfortunately they don't pick up any points on the Montreal Canadiens. And even though, you know, we expect the Canadiens to probably finish fourth in the North Division, they've got five games in hand. Or, sorry, after tonight, they've got four games in hand.
You're talking about the for those of you who don't know, the Oilers and the Canadiens were playing tonight in Montreal, and it was the dreaded 3-point game, that game going into overtime. And as he referenced there, Montreal winning in overtime, defeating the Edmonton Oilers. So they're moving a little bit closer to Edmonton in those North Division standings. And as you know, that's basically what we're at this point in time. It's fairly clear who the top four teams are going to be in the North, and I'm not sure what could possibly happen. I thought maybe if Calgary could defeat Toronto last night, but they lost to Toronto. They're playing again tonight, but it seems more evident than not, as game after game goes by, that it's going to be the top four teams in the North Division are the ones that you all know and love at this point in time. You know,
right, and that's why the thing to watch now is, yes, I mean, that's, we've known that for a while. I mean, I don't think anything over the weekend changed that. The question is now, can Montreal catch one of Winnipeg or Edmonton? And that's why the games in hand are significant, right? We know Montreal was off with COVID. Montreal's not out of it for, second or third, maybe first is a little bit unrealistic. Dave, I'm not sure where Drew went there, but, you know, you look at the Canadiens, and obviously that loss to Ottawa, you know, doesn't help. But the win tonight is significant. And again, they're not out of it. So that's something to watch here to see if Montreal is able to climb up the standings. But yeah, I don't think if anybody thinks Vancouver or Calgary is going to make it, they're delusional at this point.
Yeah, I heard some talk about that earlier on Twitter. And I thought to myself, someone said they don't want to count either of those teams out. And I thought to myself, it's time to count them out. It's a four-team race. You know, again, the Leafs look like the team to catch in first place, the Jets and the Oilers doing battle for second and third, and really the Habs taking up. And you're right, they have some games in hand. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is really about jockeying, and it's about doing the right things. And again, coming through these games clean and healthy, and you know, you can't get into bad habits, right? And tonight was an example of a bad habit. You played well. I mean, you killed the first three power plays of the game. You killed all of them. Didn't even allow many. I think you allowed one shot each in the first two, and two in the third one. So the reality is, you limited Ottawa. You didn't give them a ton of chances. Your PK continued to have success, and then again in the second period, you started to do what you do when you're a more talented team, and the Jets took it to the Senators, and then in the third period they took their foot off the gas, and that's, I think, the message they're probably speaking about right now in the post game show.
And you know, mention this too. Go ahead, Drew.
I was just going to say, you know, Dave, to your point, the Jets' best players tonight were the best players that are on their roster. I mean, if you look at the possession numbers, and I'm looking at it here on my second screen, you know, Jets are well over 60% in everybody, you know, on all the top three lines. It actually wasn't a great night for the fourth line, the Perreault, Thompson, Lewis line. They only had a Corsi 4 of 33%. But the other players for the Jets, the guys the Jets are going to most rely on night in and night out to lead them to victory, were the best players for the team. And that's what you want to see. You want to see a guy like Dubois, you know, get back onto the score sheet with his couple goals. And you want to see Wheeler getting some points. And, you know, you want to see that line starting to get some offense together. And of course, you know, Kyle Connor getting his goal. So, you know, way more good than bad for the Winnipeg Jets tonight. Mm-hmm. There's obviously some areas that they need to clean up. You would have loved them to sort of just shut it down when it was 4-1 late in the third period. They weren't able to do that, and I'm sure that's something that they're going to pay attention to, not dwell on, I would say, but pay attention to. But that's certainly more good than bad for the Jets tonight in their 4-3 victory over the Ottawa Senators, Ezzy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I really like Tucker Pullman's game, and I'm not sure if it was Dave or Drew tweeting. I saw the, you know, is that Tucker Pullman or Bobby Orr reference?
That was pure Manuk.
And, you know, they had a great game last game. And, you know, even though they didn't, you know, get the wins against the Toronto Maple Leafs, I really liked, you know, that pairing. And that's kind of something to watch, as we talked about on the Saturday show, right? Like, it's been the same lineup for how long now, right? And, you wonder, you know, unless there's a couple of losses in a row on this road trip, you wonder, you know, is there going to be any line juggling? Certainly based on, you know, tonight's game, I don't think we're going to see any line juggling in the game Thursday night versus Montreal. But you're right, Drew, the fourth game maybe, you know, didn't have one of their stronger games. But, you know, we got to talk about Andrew Kopp. I mean, you know, Dave tweeted this out, you know, he's having a career year this year and obviously a shortened season, but, you know, just a beautiful pass to Adam Lowry. I thought that was probably the nicest goal the Jets scored. They weren't pretty goals tonight, boys, but, you know, the Jets will take them. So I really like, you know, the third line, and they've been consistent all year long. So you're right, Drew. I mean, Dubois, Stastny, Wheeler, you know, it's nice that they, you know, got some goals, one of them being on a power play, albeit it looked like it might have ended and it might have been an even strength goal. But the point was, you know, that Dubois is a guy that's not maybe scoring like he would like. And, you know, again, I don't think you can extrapolate too much from this game, because obviously you expected the Jets to win it, and it's only one game. But certainly with the five games on the road coming up in 8 days, I mean, you'd rather go into this road trip with a win against the worst team in the division as opposed to a loss. So I think exactly, there's a few burps, you know, hiccups, I should say, burps, I guess, works too in the third period. But
when it's you, you're more likely to burp than hiccup, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I exactly. Your point well taken there, Ezzy. And, this is a Jets game that, you know, they get the 2 points against an Ottawa Senators team that they are better than, but that so many other teams have not been able to get the 2 points against the Senators. And I think that when you look back at season's end, you know, the Jets' success against the Senators is going to be a factor in the fact that this team is going to handily make the playoffs. You know, and I'm sure that if you're going to go into, you know, Calgary at season's end, then, you know, that they're going to look back at all the losses they've had against the Senators, Dave, and say, yeah, those are, you know, huge losses. Those are signs that, you know, that are when our season was going off the rails success wise, you know, that was an indicator that they weren't able to win those games that they quote unquote should win. And, you know, you can say the Jets record against the best teams in the North is only average, and it is only average. That's, you know, so be it. Their record against the bottom feeders in the North Division, against the Ottawas, the Vancouvers, and the Calgaries, is so damn good that you only need to go 500 against the best teams to qualify for the playoffs.
Yeah, and, you know, Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Sun asked Paul Maurice this today in the pregame availability, and he spoke about, is this a game you should win? And Paul Maurice has, you know, done well. I mean, he's not a neophyte when it comes to handling media questions. And the reality is he knew what to say. He didn't diminish what the Senators team is. He also didn't put him on a pedestal where it looked like he was being completely disingenuous. But he spoke to the fact that this is a team that has lots of talent, has some veteran leaders on it. And again, he kind of left it unsaid, which is what we've talked about, which is that there's still that missing element within this team. And again, that's not you're not knocking it. You're just being honest about what the Ottawa Senators are. They're a team that's going to give it to you. They are well coached. You have to give them that. And again, I wasn't entirely surprised. Like, that's what you kind of expected from the Senators team, right? A team that's not going to give up, a team that's going to be plucky till the end. And again, it's crazy to think that Forsberg save, how significant that was. So to me, you're right, Drew. This is a team that you had to beat, that you expected to beat. But, you know, just because you expect to beat them, I'm sure Montreal was thinking the same thing the other night when Ottawa was beating them in their building. So to me, it's a function of, you're absolutely right. These are games you have to take home. These are games that you have to put in the standings bank cleanly. Because, you know, again, like if you look at the standings, it's just so tight right now in that North Division amongst those top three teams. So, and now with Montreal winning tonight, you know, they're getting even closer. So I just think it's absolutely a function. And it's a function of beating a team you should beat. But how many times have we talked about that idea of beating a team you should beat and then you lose to them? So to be able to do it consistently is obviously very important in terms of adding to the standings bank.
It happens all the time, to your point, Dave. And so there's almost two aspects of tonight's game that I think are positive for the Jets. Obviously, one, that they get the clean 2 points. I mean, you can't, and that's the most important, because, you know, you need to put those points in the bank when you can get them. And two, their play at 5-on-5 and their control of the game at 5-on-5, I think, is a huge factor as well. Their success, so that, you know, this isn't a, I'm going to say, for lack of a better term, this isn't a cheap win. This is a well-deserved win for the Jets, a game that they controlled, that looks closer on the scoreboard than it really was reflecting in the play on the ice. And that's what the Jets will obviously needed, and that's what the Jets wanted, and that's why they can be happy, with the 4-3 victory over the Senators. Quick thought, and then we'll go to Jets head coach Paul Maurice.
Yeah, and I think what can't be lost in this is that, you know, the Jets were coming into this game, you know, not playing their best hockey necessarily, not just the two losses to Toronto, but, you know, kind of the way that road trip ended. So I think, again, heading on this road trip, you know, feeling good about your game and feeling good about yourself, even though the third period maybe wasn't, the best finish to the game and you let Ottawa kind of creep back into it, it's obviously more good than bad. I agree with that, Drew.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice. He's at the dais, so here's the Jets head coach.
And we'll get going with Mike McIntyre from the Winnipeg Free Press. Go ahead, Mike.
I'll start with that first period. Not ideal, I guess, to be shorthanded three times, but did you think that maybe that extra break, that day of practice, maybe help some of the jump that it seemed you guys had off the hop?
Yeah, I liked our first, and I liked the energy that we had on our kill. I thought it was really effective. I'm not complaining about the penalties. They are what they were, but I felt that way the whole game. I mean, the third will be, I'm sure, asked about, but I thought tonight, I thought we had better jump. We executed better. We were faster. We looked like we had a couple of days off and we needed it.
We'll go next to Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, Paul, you got a lot of talented players at your disposal, but I'm not sure if you have many that you use the same way as Andrew Kopp, and that he kills penalties, plays on the power play, he's defensively responsible 5-on-5, and he's having a career year in points. Where does that trust come from?
Oh, he's absolutely earned it, right? Nothing ever given to Andrew. And developed his game, right? Really worked hard at becoming an offensive player. And he's always had that defensive gift. So no different than those great offensive players. You have guys that have a defensive acumen, right? They read the play so very well all the time. It's his strength. But then he's worked on his hands, and he's worked on making plays, and I think he started to use that. Andrew can play on any line. Right. And effectively, and he transitions back and forth very well between the right defensive read, the right level of risk in his game to make a play. He's unusual in that. There's not a lot of guys like him.
Next to Paul Friesen from the Winnipeg Sun. Go ahead, Paul.
Allow me to be the one to ask you about the third. I'm sure you would have loved to just clamp down a 4-1 lead. What happened?
You know, I think we did. In the event that we were right, we took the penalty, thin, dust, cat's ear-like. And we give up that goal, there wasn't the onslaught. I didn't feel it. I thought we were in good shape. I didn't feel that they were I'm sorry about that one. I was all right with our game. I was all right with our game straight through, and I didn't feel that we were under siege. They're going to push, the pull their goalie, those kind of things. But we had – I really liked our offensive game. People walk away from that, and they get a 4-1 lead against Ottawa. You should be able to hold that lead. I didn't feel we changed our game, and – I got way, way more respect for Ottawa than I think most people do, and that might be why we're 5-1.
Go on to Ken Weeb from Sportsnet. Go ahead, Weaver.
Well, how do you quantify the 2-game for Pierre-Luc Dubois, given what he's been going through for your team?
Yeah. To settle in? I don't feel that Pierre's been going through that much. I'm not going to rate that to the players that left. We're really, really happy with Pierre. It's good for him to score goals. I know points are important, but he's a really good young center iceman that's going to get better. I like him with Blake a lot. I think that's helped his game. Maybe he feels better confidence wise. He scores too, but I think he's building. I'm good with him. Like this has been a good thing for our team. We're winning hockey games. He's helped us do that. I guess numbers are important. They kind of tell you more empirically that a guy having an impact in the game, but much growth here for this young man. He's going to be a good for the Jets for a long time. I'm good with where he's at.
We'll go next to Scott Billick from The Sun. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, Paul, just keeping on Pierre-Luc there. I get the sense from him when he's talking that maybe this is a bit of theory, but he wasn't always as comfortable in his roles in Columbus, and here he's finding that. Do you see that at all?
The truth is I don't know like what his experience there was, and it's not important because who you are as a 19-year-old and a 22-year-old and a 24-year-old is just going to change, right? The player changes, especially at that age. That curve is really steep. So we'll kind of relearn about Pierre-Luc, just like Nikolai and Kyle and all those young players that come in, because they change every year. They get stronger and they get faster. So will change as he is, but he's really important of what we do. Feeling at home and feeling a role, you know what, that comes with age too, because when you're 19, you make a whole lot of bad mistakes on the ice, but when you're like these young guys, you also put up, you don't see that yet. Right, I'm putting up good numbers. Why don't you just? But there's a whole game they have to grow into. It's the best league in the world, and there's Andrew Copps out there, right? That are going to defend as well as you score, and you got to play against those guys. So where he fits and how he fits, I'd just say he fits, and that will change as he goes forward. The young players always want more early. And then they kind of go through that process where they understand they have help. He's willing to do that. He's built to do it. And it's innate for him to do some of those good defensive things. So he has that. And then, you know, he's just going to grow and play against the other team's best at some point in time.
We'll go back to Mike McIntyre from the Free Press. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, you've talked about playing Pierre-Luc with Blake and why you think that can be a good fit for him on that first goal. Is that what you really like to see? You know, Blake's an elite playmaker and passer in this league, and that Pierre-Luc just rips that shot, doesn't look to defer to anybody.
Right.
I see he had 5 shot attempts tonight.
Right.
Not sure where that ranks, but it would probably be up there with his numbers.
For sure.
So you like
So the part about that is in turn the under pressure. He comes out and makes that pass. I think Pierre can do that with his eyes. He controlled the puck like that, and I don't think that's necessarily been a part of his game, because it's not for most of those young players. You'll see Kyle Connor does that now, and he never did that when he first came in the league. Right, take a guy one on one, understand his speed and how to use it. So Pierre's going to learn that from Blake, and then at some point in time, he'll play with different kinds of players. Be the guy doing that, right? And finding those guys in the holes. And that's players always so much more from their peers and their colleagues than they do from the coaches. We're systems. We're trying to teach 5 guys how to move. That stuff they learn from each other.
Well, Jeff, Free Press. Go ahead, Jeff.
I want to stay on that Blake and kind of connection. I'm just kind of curious, when you watch them, you see there's a comfort level there. It almost feels like the game slows down for him. Maybe it's his age, maybe it's just the chemistry there, but it seems like Blake kind of offers that comfort zone, whereas maybe, you know, as he continues to learn the new system, don't practice as much, you know, a lot of information.
Yeah.
Is Blake that kind of piece for him?
Yeah, so the part of that statement, like the game kind of slows down, it's because Blake can hang on to it under pressure, right? So some guys will get the puck on that one battle in the corner, and you need to come to them as fast as you can because they're going to need that support. With Blake, you can almost stay away from them a little bit, right? If I've got, you know, he's got full control of the puck, you don't have to come to me. And I also, but I'm just kind of, because I've answered about 4 questions about this pairing, I'm not sure it's going to stay, right? I know that it'll work, and it may work kind of long-term, but we're going to run this probably another stretch of time. Got to be careful with the games I put on. And then I'm going to want to get fairly close to what I think we're starting with as we get closer to the playoffs. So I like it for now. I'm not sure that it's our best lineup just as yet. We're still figuring that out. I think when we get off this 5-game road trip, we'll have a much better handle on it.
Thanks very much, Coach.
Okay.
Coach Paul Maurice, who mentioned
keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile!
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go,
we have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant, like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve post-game show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Ezra Ginsberg's with me. Dave Minuk is with us as well. He's live in the press box at the arena, having just watched the Winnipeg Jets defeat the Ottawa Senators by a 4-3 margin. Nice to see so many of you joining us here for the Illegal Curve post-game show. We do this each and every time the Winnipeg Jets play. As soon as the game ends, the Illegal Curve post-game show goes live. While you're here, if you haven't already, hit the subscribe button, smash the ring button, whatever it might take. Give us a thumbs up, leave a review, subscribe to the podcast. Do all those great things to help support us here with the Illegal Curve post-game show and the Illegal Curve hockey show on Saturday morning. Gentlemen, always interesting to hear from Jets head coach Paul Maurice, and he continues to say that the lineup that he's using currently is unlikely to be his lineup come playoff time, and he's not even sure that it's the optimal lineup that he would deploy, which I think is a particularly interesting tactic for a head coach to take. But the results are the results, and it's working, and so right now he knows that this is the opportunity that he has, which is weird that it's in the middle of the season, to sort of try some different things with this Jets grouping.
What I think is even more interesting is what's happening in the chat. There's a lot of good talk happening about Andrew Copp's next contract. We all know that, you know, he's a pending free agent. And, you know, I the way he's playing, we talked about it earlier, he's hit career highs, right? 30 points now on the season, 12 goals. And, you know, someone even said $5 million, guys. Like, you know, it might be that high. I certainly wouldn't be surprised if it was $4 million. But, you know, yeah, Drew, I mean, I don't know what there is left to say aside from about the, you know, the lines I mean, the big move would be Paul Stastny going up the middle, right? And the way the Jets are playing these days, even though, you know, those two games against the Leafs maybe weren't their best two games, even though the second game was obviously the better one, you know, I don't think much is going to change. Why would you expect the fourth line to change? The third line is probably their most consistent line. And Scheifele, Ehlers, and Connor are their three best offensive players. So the big move would be moving Paul Stastny down and probably moving Andrew Kopp up to that second line. But we'll see what happens on this road trip. The two games against Montreal are going to be huge. We talked about it before we cut to Paul Maurice. I mean, the Canadians do have a chance at catching the Jets. And certainly if they're able to, that's what they're thinking, right? Like they see, you know, the Jets coming in. And they're saying, well, if we're going to catch them, I mean, we got to beat them a couple times. They certainly have to win one of them, but they're obviously going to go for both wins. So, you know, we'll see what happens there, you know, in those two games. Maybe if, you know, the Dubois-Stastny-Wheeler line struggles a little bit, that's when you'll see the move. But I'm not surprised, and I don't think you guys are at all either, you know, that Paul Maurice said that, and he's going to continue, you know, rolling with these four lines. And one of the most interesting things I thought he said in that press conference is what he said about Pierre-Luc Dubois when asked by Scotty Billick, you know, if, you know, he knew anything about, you know, his comfort level in Columbus. And Maurice basically said, like, a player when he's 18 or 19 is going to change when he's 21 or 22. And that's what I think is forgotten about Dubois. Like, yes, we know that he was a high draft pick, you know, taken right after Line A, but, you know, this is a guy who's only 22 years old, and you know, you expect him almost to come in here because he's played, you know, 5 years in the NHL or 4 years in the NHL, and he's a veteran. No, I mean, this guy is only scratching the surface, and his best years are to come. So I thought that was interesting when talking about Dubois. Maurice basically said, like, we don't know if he's more comfortable. I don't know how comfortable he was in Columbus. Obviously, Torts guys likes to make everybody feel uncomfortable, but that was probably the most interesting tidbit I thought that came out of that post-game presser.
Yeah, the only thing I would add, and as he's touched on it already, is just that idea that Paul Maurice almost acknowledged how many games he was going to go with that line. I thought I heard the number three coming out of his
mouth. He did say three. Yeah, he did say it.
So to me, it sounded like he was just saying, I'm going to go with these guys for the next three games, and then I'm going to switch it up. And, you know, again, didn't we say that on the Saturday show? And Paul Maurice has been talking about this consistently.
That the What's the significance of three, though? Like, I'm not sure why he said three.
Well, like, you know, I think he's looking at the this is just speculative. I think he's looking at the remaining schedule for the Jets, and he's going to try things, and he's going to take, you know, the next three games and say that's a reasonable sample size, and he'll see he'll at that point in time know what this line can do together. But I think, and then also, he'll maybe try something else for the next six games or whatever.
No, I get it might that. Be. I'm just saying, why is three the magic number? It's just odd number.
I think what three gives him, though, if I'm reading the schedule right, is that it gives him two against Montreal and one against Toronto. And so what that'll end up allowing him, or is it, yeah, that's right, isn't it? It's two.
It's Ottawa first, then Toronto.
Oh, okay. So it gives him two against Montreal and then one more against Ottawa. So he gets to see what it's like against those opponents. And then maybe he switches things up for the Toronto series. So, you know, I'm not sure as he either why he's thinking three more. Maybe Drew's right. Maybe that'll give him a decent enough kind of sample size. And then he'll be ready to move it to a different sort of pairing and allow those to kind of get some chances to form chemistry. And again, like I said, it's kind of like what he's learned, I think, from the play-in series, was that idea of Paul Maurice needing to, you know, test things out, because you never know what's going to happen with your lineup. They've remained healthy, but you never know. And so in that instance, you have to kind of plan for the unexpected, right? You can't ever expect that this lineup is going to be the way you go into the playoffs. So as a result, get other guys feeling good together, get other guys, you know, seeing those combinations, especially once you've banked enough points that, you know, that, I mean, again, we look, it's almost a foregone conclusion. What is it, like 95.9% right now, the Jets' ability to make the playoffs? But at the same time, I think you just have to kind of allow yourself to have that sort of latitude as a coach to say, okay, well, now I can play these guys together, and I know we're not going to have a significant fall off, as opposed to having to guess what it'll look like if necessity creates that.
Up to 95.8% the Jets playoff odds.
Come on, we're not going to do that, are we, Drew? Come on.
No, we're not. But you know, I just wanted to make sure, you know, accuracy counts for something on this show. Not a lot, obviously, but a little bit. But yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, it just goes to what we've talked about, how this, you know, this battle in the North Division is over. That, you know, the Calgarys and the Vancouvers and obviously the Ottawas have no chance, and just a matter of now jockeying for position, which allows Paul, and where, you know, jockeying for position in a season where position, you know, it doesn't really matter if you finish second or third or fourth. I don't think there's a huge difference. We've talked about that, you know, over the course of the last couple of weeks. And so that allows Paul Maurice to try and do some interesting things with this Jets lineup that he hasn't done before. And he's got more options than obviously he ever had before. Because remember, you know, the last couple of years, you know, he never had any faith in the fourth line. So the fourth line was getting, you know, half a dozen minutes, you know, at best. Now the fourth line is consistently getting, you know, if not right into double digits, then right at the cusp of double digits. And that allows him to do things like move, you know, shuffle the lines and shuffle the forward group. And, you know, like you said, he's obviously got some other line matchups, line combinations in his mind that he's going to unveil between now and the end of the regular season, now and the end of the road trip. And it'll be very interesting to see what else, you know, he's got at work in his mad scientist lair that a head coach usually doesn't get to employ or doesn't get to try this time of year, except in cases where the team is struggling, so he has to go to the drawing board, as opposed to the team is, you know, firmly in a playoff spot and now he gets to try new things. Very interesting, very different for the Winnipeg Jets, and I think very different for a lot of the coaches in the North Division and other divisions, you know, in the league, where it's almost like there really aren't any playoff races.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just don't know how many different line combinations you can see, right? Like, the only guy that's going to move up from the fourth line is Matty Perreault. I think we'd all agree with that. And if anything, Adam Lowry would be moving down to the fourth line if Paul Stastny moves down to the third line center, right? And then I know a lot of people have even talked about, you know, reuniting Andrew Kopp with Mark Scheifele, which is always going to be, you know, your top line. But I mean, that's kind of it for me. Like, you know, there's maybe two or three moves that are going to happen. And I think what's going to be even more interesting to see is if the Jets can remain healthy through this last month of the season. That's really what's going to be the most important. And Dave makes a really good point. When Scheifele goes down, I mean, yes, the Line A injury was significant, but the Scheifele injury was much more significant because you didn't have the center depth that you have this year, right? So, yes, I agree, Drew. Like, he has the luxury now because the Jets have clinched a playoff spot. Let's be honest here. Like, that's why I was giving you a hard time. Like, 95.8, come on. Like, it's for guys. Like, and hockey right now is not important for the Vancouver Canucks. We just want them to be healthy at this point, right? So, like, we're not going to pile up on the Canucks. We might pile up on the Flames. Just kidding. But I mean,
well, no, but hang on, Izzy. I want to stop you right there for a second. I thought the best comment from Paul Maurice's media availability was his subtweet there of a team like the Calgary Flames, where he, you know, where what, you know, Maurice said, you know, I take the Ottawa Senators seriously. I give them the respect. And that, you know, is why the Jets are 5-1 against the Senators. And you could see the underlying context of that line is a lot of the other teams in the North Division, namely the Calgary Flames, because I think they're the ones who almost have the worst record against Ottawa that, you know, that aren't in the playoffs, didn't take Calgary seriously, didn't take Ottawa seriously, didn't give them the respect. And that's why the Flames' record against the Senators is so crummy this year.
Yeah, and the Jets and Flames, obviously, you know, of all the teams in that division, the Jets and Flames do not like each other. I think there are a lot of teams that don't like the Flames, but you're right. I mean, you know, the Senators are a team that are much better than they were, you know, last year. But, I mean, the Flames obviously would help the Jets out big time if they were able to beat the Leafs tonight, right? And then the Jets would stay, what are they, 4 back now of the Leafs, as opposed to being potentially 6 back again, right?
Let me ask you that there. Let me ask Dave this. Do you really care? I mean, if you're a Jets fan right now and you know, wouldn't you rather than the Calgary just stays down and stays low in the standings than worrying about catching the Maple Leafs? I mean, does it really matter if you finish first in the North Division?
No.
I mean, I'd rather Calgary be, you know, continue to be done and continue to not have a chance, continue to not have a pulse than really worry about the Leafs coming back to the pack a little bit in the North. I'd rather the lead expand. You know, you've already got your 2 points. If you're the Jets, I'd rather Calgary continue to lose tonight. And who cares if the Leafs keep pace with what you're doing? I'd rather Calgary continue to not have a chance.
Well, yeah, no, it's a good point. And I think we're going to be talking about that, you know, from now until the end of the season, right? Because I mean, the argument against, you know, not caring, I guess, if you finish first or not, would be that there might be some complacency that creeps into your game, But the reality is, guys, yeah, Dave talked about this on Saturday's show, right? Like, there's this kind of, I guess there's this myth out there that the way you finish in the regular season is going to have an impact on how you play in the playoffs. And it's just not true, right? Like, if that was the case, Tampa Bay wouldn't have been swept by Columbus 2 years ago, right? They were obviously, you know, one of the best regular seasons of all time. So, I mean, the argument to support what you just said, Drew, is it doesn't really matter if you're a playoff team, you just get in. Like, we hear that all the time from coaches, from players, like making the playoffs is actually harder than, you know, winning a round in the playoffs is kind of, you know, the old joke, right? And that's kind of the thing here. Like, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter in a regular season, especially when, you know, in the Canadian division, North division, you're not even going to have fans. So yeah, I mean, you don't want to get too caught up with, you know, each game and, you know, if the Jets, you know, get some help from Calgary, because I mean, these standings, it's going to go up and down, right? Like, you're going to have the Jets in second and then Edmonton in third, and then they're going to flip flop. And then who knows, maybe Montreal catches Edmonton and Edmonton falls down to fourth. So to answer your question in kind of a long winded way, no, if you're a Jets fan, I wouldn't worry too much, you know, about Leafs games that are happening at this point in the season, because, you know, you're going to have to go through the Leafs anyways to get to the West final, right, Drew?
Unless they were to get upset.
It sounds weird to say that you're going to have to go through Toronto to get to the West final. But again, this is the weirdest year of all time. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, no, I think Ezzy hit it on the head. And I think the only reason, I think I saw it, one of our commenters just said it, the only thing you may want home ice advantage for, Drew, is that idea of last change and controlling the matchups a little bit. So for the Fine. Jets, that could definitely be in it. No, I mean, it's a worthwhile point. And I think it's probably what you're going to be challenging for in the playoffs or in the race to the playoffs, is that idea of getting to final change. And I think it's a very good point that C-Mac, I think it was, made in the comments, and I saw it, and I agree with him. I think that would be the kind of the carrot that you're feeding your team, because I you know, again, like I said, to me, what is the biggest advantage is being able to get the matchups. Like, you know, when you now matchups are less important when you have four lines that are rolling. Sure. And you're feeling confident in your four lines. And Paul Maurice has talked about that, and he's alluded to the idea that he feels comfortable having any of his lines out there. But I mean, at the same time, you know, if you have a defensive matchup, you're probably feeling more confident if it's Adam Lowry's line taking it than it is if it's Mark Scheifele's line taking it. So from a coaching perspective, that's definitely going to be the big carrot for this team, is to continue to push for that. Because, again, you're not going to necessarily say that to the team, but that's probably the underlying thought within the coaching staff, I would imagine.
I agree with you there. Calgary Flames, by the way, against the Ottawa Senators this year, 2-4-1. So, you know, you can see a team that should be better than Ottawa, a team that is on paper better than Ottawa, has not succeeded against Ottawa. And I think that, you know, that speaks to, you know, Paul Maurice, you know, look, I get the criticism of him. I've criticized him. He's done a good job with this team for the most part this season. He has them beating the teams they should beat, and that is a pretty good sign of a coach who still has the attention of his team when the Jets' record against, you know, Ottawa, against Vancouver, and against Calgary is what it is this season. That means that they're doing something right, and that's a large part of that has to do with coaching. The Jets against Vancouver this year 5-2. The Jets against Ottawa this year now 5-1, and the Jets against Calgary this year 5-2-1. You beat up on the lessers. You hold the court against the teams you like to think of yourselves as relatively evenly matched with, and you're going to be a successful squad. And that's what the Winnipeg Jets are this season.
Yeah,
let's leave it there. Sorry, Ezzy, one final thought. Go ahead.
No, yeah, just quickly, Drew. I was going to say, you know, having watched the Jets play, you know, Ottawa tonight and Calgary recently, I don't know if Calgary is much better than Ottawa, right? Like, Paul Maurice talked about
Ottawa
this.
Ottawa plays harder.
Well, no, they absolutely do. And it's a surprise with Daryl Sutter behind the bench. You know, it kind of had an impact early on. We talked about that. What did they win? 4 of their first 5 under Daryl. But after that, I mean, Calgary is done. We talked about that. I think big changes are coming. I don't know if it happens, you know, before the trade deadline or it happens in the offseason, but I think there's a good chance a player like Johnny Gaudreau is going to be traded. I'm not sure who else is going to be traded, but you build your team around, you know, Matt Tkachuk, Noah Hannafin, Jacob Markstrom, and a few others. But they have to be the most disappointing team in the North Division for sure.
No, the only thing I want to point out, sorry, Drew, do you have a breaking news or big news or something?
Big news on a North Division rival, Brendan Gallagher. He blocked a shot today, friendly fire, in the Habs loss or Habs victory over the Edmonton Oilers. He has a fractured thumb. He's out for weeks. So that probably will put him out, I'm going to guess, at least till the end of the regular season. But that's a huge loss for the Montreal Canadiens, because we know that Brendan Gallagher really is you know, certainly one of the driving forces on that Montreal Canadiens team. So some big news for a North Division rival in that Brendan Gallagher of the Montreal Canadiens, out weeks, according to head coach Dominic Ducharme.
Yeah, no, the only thing I was going to add is I just thought Logan Stanley's play was meriting some recognition, because, you know, he looks more and more confident as his gut goes on. And there was one pass he made to Blake Wheeler from behind the Jets net, a dangerous pass up the middle, but he, you know, showed no hesitation and he made it. And again, I actually thought his passing was really good. I think the Jets gave him the helmet after the game. I think I saw that on their Twitter. So clearly the team is recognizing it. And again, like I said, I just thought it was another example of a player who's become more and more comfortable in his own skin and in with his game. At the NHL level, at the highest level for hockey. And so I thought his game was good tonight. I thought it was another example of his maturation as a player in the NHL.
Let me ask you guys this. It's an early game, so we can go a couple extra minutes longer. Hopefully Kenny and Rennie don't mind.
I think they're not going to, they're not starting till 9:30. So we've got, folks will have some time before they get going.
Fair enough. What's your priority? If you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, and you're acquiring a defenseman, mm-hmm. is your priority left side or is your priority right side at this point? Is it replacing Logan Stanley in the lineup or is it replacing Tucker Poolman in the lineup?
Yeah, we talked about this Saturday, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's a tough question to answer, because Logan Stanley has surprised everyone, including, you know, the Jets coaching staff, in terms of, you know, how far he has come this year, right? And it was because Tucker Poolman was on the COVID list earlier this year that allowed Logan Stanley to crack into that top six, right, Dave? So, I mean, it depends who you're acquiring, I guess, would be my cop-out answer, right?
It's a good cop-out answer.
Well, but just looking at that left side, right, like, you have to almost play the, you know, who comes out first game, right? Yeah. And it's obviously not going to be Josh Morrissey on the left side. So if you acquire a left shot defenseman, you know, Derek Forbort and Neil Pionk, I don't know if you want to break that combo up. And then, you know, so it's hard to answer. Matthias Ekholm is a guy that, you know, we thought could be an option for the Jets. It's looking less and less, you know, likely that that's going to happen. And then, you know, we found out, you know, through Elliot Friedman that, you know, David Savard is maybe not a guy that's high on the Jets priority list. So who are we talking about, right? Like, you know, Jamie Oleksiak is a guy that a lot of people talk about, for example. You know, I think maybe because of his experience and maybe his offensive upside, he's a slight improvement over Logan Stanley, but I've really liked Logan Stanley's game. So, you know, the more and more I watch this team, you know, like I kind of, you know, defer to the right side. And, you know, that means, you know, Tucker Poolman most likely, but he's on the top. Like, it's very hard to figure out, you know, what the priority would be. But, I'll say I would probably lean towards the right side and see what Dave has to say here.
Well, the truth is, I have to think that, I mean, despite what Elliot Friedman says, you got to think that the Jets would love a David Savard type, a big physical guy, yep. who prevents, you know, high danger chances. And it's funny because I don't watch a lot of games outside the Winnipeg or even the North, but I happened to catch a little bit of that Columbus, Florida game that was on television last night. So I watched a bit of David Savard's game, and I watched the Columbus Blue Jackets, who, by the way, have stunk of late. And I think pretty sure Patrick Laine got benched after he gave up the puck, which led to the second goal against what, Drew?
Is it even news at this point in time when Tortorella benches Laine?
No, probably not. But anyways, so the point is, though, that Savard is a big boy. And to me, again, if you look, ideally, Logan Stanley has played. And again, I've watched the kid play since he was playing in the AHL. And you're impressed by him. But at the same time, you're probably going to want a proven veteran in that role. And you're going to want to have depth. So I would think if you're the Winnipeg Jets, you're going to want. And again, I thought Tucker Poolman had a good game tonight. But at the same time, I think he's playing above his head. I think that ideally you're going to have a guy like David Savard paired with Josh Morrissey, and have Neil Pionk paired with Derek Forbort. And then your third pairing is where you have a little bit more latitude. But realistically, again, like, you know, if you're going to have Dylan DeMello, I don't know why people seem to have really kind of start to crap on Dylan DeMello, but if you look at his numbers, they have actually been pretty good. So, well, so he seems.
They look at his goals and they think that because he's not scoring goals and he's not getting assists. Well,
but I mean, if you ever thought that Dylan DeMello was going to be a points producer, you weren't paying attention to what Dylan DeMello brings. And I think the reality is, if you look at his numbers have been pretty good, and he's been one of the better defenders for the Winnipeg Jets. So while it's sometimes it's easy to pick on the guy, I think he's actually been better than people give him credit. So I think you have Dylan DeMello, and you know, again, whether it's, I mean, if you throw Tucker Pullman on his offside, or you throw, like, again, you're gonna have some depth. Maybe, or you leave Logan Stanley in. I'm not trying to pull Tucker Pullman out of the lineup, but I'm just saying that if the Jets are going to kind of go for it, I think that in this season they're going to go for it with a guy like Savard, who stabilizes Josh Morrissey. And I think that's the key, because we've talked about it. You're asking Josh Morrissey, in my mind, to do much more than he's trying to do too much, right, with that, within that pairing. And I think if you give him that veteran guy who's going to allow him to kind of settle down his game a little bit, you'll see a much better Josh Morrissey this season.
And one thing I think, you know, another player we should mention that was included in the chat on Saturday's show, I forget who included it, Mike Riley. I just, like, you know, had my eye on him during tonight's game. And, you know, he's a guy, you know, that you remember he played for Montreal and he was a Minnesota draft pick, played for University of Minnesota, actually. And, you know, he's a guy that has really good, you know, defensive impact and offensive impact numbers. And, you know, he's a guy, left shot defenseman, I should mention, I guess. And, you know, we talked about this, you know, with John Mattis of The Score on Saturday show. Like, the trade market is not great right now. When you look at the names out there, right, like, you know, Taylor Hall, Taylor Hall last year was maybe an exciting name, but, you know, Kyle Palmieri, like, you know, David Savard, Matthias Ekholm, the way I look at, you know, the D candidates, I guess, is if tier one is Matthias Ekholm and David Savard, and then you're looking at, like, tier two, right, like, I would probably lean towards, like, you know, Vince Dunn, if St. Louis is serious about moving him. He's a left shot defenseman, and or a Mike Riley, right? Because then you're talking about a third pairing guy, and then so you have to, I guess, change your expectations in terms of what Chevy is bringing in. He's not necessarily bringing in a guy to play in your top four. He's giving the bottom pair an upgrade, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. So, you know, when Matthias Ekholm's name was out there a lot a couple of weeks ago, that's what, you know, you were thinking, okay, well, he can come in and, you know, he can play in your top four, which, you know, then begs the question, you know, who's the guy that gets squeezed out, because he would most likely be your second pairing left shot defenseman. But I look at Vince Dunn or Mike Riley or even a Jamie Oleksiak as kind of guys I would personally prefer, but we know that Chevy probably has a guy, you know, that he's been working on and has his eye on. It might be somebody that, you know, we haven't even been mentioning. But aside from Ekholm and Savard, Dave, like, you're talking about more third pairing guys, right?
Well, you know, speaking about, you know, Chevy and his stealth history at the trade deadline, you know, remember, it was, everybody was focused on Derek Brassard, and when and Derek Brassard didn't end up here because he, you know, Vegas put in the block on him, and then where did Chevy go? He went out and got Paul Stastny, and we know how that turned out back in 2018, and, you know, Paul Stastny still back in Winnipeg again now, and a key contributor to this Winnipeg Jets team. My watch says it's 9:30. My watch also says there's a national championship basketball game I want to go watch. So we're going to hand off the post.
Who you got, Drew? Gonzaga?
Well, Gonzaga apparently had a lousy first half. I haven't been able to watch any of it. And Baylor is taking it to Gonzaga after the first 20 minutes. So I'm going to go catch. Well, sorry, Dave, go ahead. What were you going
to
say?
I was going to say, more importantly, send people to Sean and Ken, but make sure.
That's what I was going
to
do.
Hold on. Make sure they go to illegalcurve.com to see the recap and hit the like button before they head out of our show.
Exactly right. On that note, everybody, we thank you for joining us for the Illegal Curve post-game show. Hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, ring the bell, whatever you do, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, leave us a comment, tell us why you love the show. It really helps us and encourages us to do it each and
every. Send Drew some hate mail, whatever.
Send me some hate mail if that makes you feel better, as he does it all the time. Kenny and Rennie, Sean Reynolds, Ken Weeb, they're on their YouTube channel with the post-game show. You can go check that out. We remind you, we'll be back Thursday night, about, you know, same time, sort of 8:30, 8:35, right around that, to recap the Jets and the Montreal Canadiens. And, of course, Saturday morning again, 9 a.m., the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to all of our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Boston Pizza. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. All your post-game recap information is available on our website. Dave Manuk, what's the website?
We'll have a website called illegalcurve.com.
There you go. And for Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for watching. This has been the Illegal Curve post-game show.